This is 105.9 The Region, and you're listening to Discovery, the radio show for podcasters. Your content, unfiltered. This is Discovery.
Hello, and welcome to Discovery, the radio show for podcasters. I'm your host, Cal Steiger. In the last 3 weeks, we've been bringing you podcasts produced by students in the broadcasting program at Durham College. We've heard updates on sports in the NHL and the MLB, reflected on fond and nostalgic memories from our childhood, and we've even heard of the myths and legends that make up the iconic fantasy creatures we know today. This week, we continue to dip into the dynamic range with two more student podcasts. First, we'll hear The History of Your Favorite Candies with hosts Jenna and Nadine, followed by Era of Evolution, discussing the changes of technology across Gen X to Gen Z. First up, The History of Candy.
And welcome to an episode of The History Of, a show and now podcast produced by Durham College students. With today's hosts, Jenna and Nadine, we will explore the history of random items and talk you through how they came to be. Today's episode is all about the history of popular candies. I am one of your hosts, Jenna Hogg.
And here co-hosting with her is me, Nadine Gonzalez.
We are candy fanatics.
Very much so. I know I have a sweet tooth myself, so I have candy whenever I can.
Absolutely. I always have a stash with me. Do you know one candy I never have, though?
What?
Licorice. And I'll tell you some history about it. Now, when I talk about the history of licorice, it is referring to black licorice, not the lovely red licorice that is superior. The earliest references to the licorice root date back to 2300 BC. At the time, the Emperor of China was testing out different medical plants and plant remedies, and licorice was one of them. His teachings were handed down orally, which over time established the herbal roots of traditional Chinese medicine. The Emperor himself believed licorice could be used as an antidote to toxins and reduce aches and pains. The medicinal root then spread to India, Africa, and Europe. Licorice was cultivated, and by 3rd century BC, it was being imported to Greece. One of Aristotle's star students included licorice in his big book about plants. Ain't that a title? An ancient Greek physician and botanist included licorice in a 5-volume book on herbal medicine. Intelligent folks weren't the only ones using licorice. In fact, soldiers of Alexander the Great would chew on the root to keep their spirits up. The Romans believed licorice root could be used as a remedy for asthma, mouth ulcers, and sore throats. So much so that you could be prescribed licorice for vocal maladies or sore throats. Aside from using it for its herbal remedies, its sweetness proved to be useful in other departments. In Germany at the time of the Renaissance, the root became a common addition to sweets and was used as a flavoring in bread, other baked goods, and alcohol. Meanwhile, over in England, it was becoming the candy we know today. Licorice arrived in England via Roman soldiers, and it continued to be planted. It was most famously grown in the gardens of Pontefract Abbey in Yorkshire. Yorkshire was indeed the birthplace of licorice as we know it. In the 1700s, George Dunhill added sugar to the licorice grown in Pontefract and made them into little coin-shaped candies. By the 19th century, licorice factories were booming around Yorkshire. The candy's popularity spread far and wide and still remains as popular as ever. Now, Nadine, I know that licorice is a popular candy and all, but personally, I'm not a huge fan.
See, I'm not a huge fan either, Jenna, so I get that it's popular, but definitely not for me. Not my taste at all.
I don't like black licorice, I don't like red licorice, and I don't like any of the spin-off flavors either.
Wait, can you help me clarify, but are Twizzlers licorice or not?
Yeah.
They are?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay, because I've had Twizzlers before. They're not the worst, but I've had it maybe once or twice, and I'm like, cool, I'm fine with not having this ever again. What's one of the candies you like having?
Personally, I'm a huge fan of gummy bears.
Ooh, speaking of, Jenna, first and foremost, do you know where gummy bears even come from?
I do not, but if I were to guess, I'm gonna say Italy, because I know they have quite a few sweet treats over there.
Okay, but I've heard that it's more common for people to assume they're from the US. In reality, the first gummy candies originate all the way back in Europe. To be specific, Germany. Let me tell you all about the history of gummy bears. Nowadays, gummy bears are one of the most popular and well-known gummy or gelatin candies sold. The first jelly candies would use starch or flour instead of gelatin to get the bouncy and soft texture that it has now. Originating roughly more than 2.5 centuries ago were these jiggly jellied cubes of candy called Turkish Delight. A confectioner back in 1777 opened a candy shop and sold these, including other traditional Turkish confections. They were made from boiled down grape juice mixed with starches. Later, when sugar syrup was made more widely available, it allowed for different flavors to shine. His family-owned candy store is the oldest business in Turkey. Turkish Delight became popular internationally, but the Europeans had a hard time making it authentically because they couldn't make the starch the same way the Turkish would. So, naturally, they cheated. Which is why there are a lot of recipes using gelatin instead of starches, which created a very different texture. So in 1909, a British candy maker that goes by the name Charles Gordon Maynard debuted wine gums. These were one of the first commercial sweets that were made with gelatin. They were a combination of chewy gelatin and sweet flavoring in a bite-sized package. It was wine gums that pioneered the gelatin gummy formula. Since they came in generic shapes like circles and oblongs, their presentation wasn't the most appealing. Later on, since the gummy candy market was looking for more whimsical and fun candies, Haribo was there to fulfill the job. Hans Riegel founded the company with their first products being colorless hard candies made in a copper pot. They were sold at local fairs and delivered by bicycle. They sold well, but not enough to take his operation to the next level. In 1922, he had an idea to mold fruit-flavored gelatin into the shape of bears. Thus, gummy bears were born, and their success eventually led to the whole world's obsession with shaped gummy candies. Out of any other animals, the gummies were modeled after bears as an homage to a European tradition going back centuries ago. By 1960, they began selling to more of Europe and changed the bears to look more like the teddy bear shapes that we see today. In 1967, Haribo manufactured packs of multicolored gummy bears instead of only in gold. This led to their trademarking of Gold Bear in 1975. These gold gummy bears came in 5 classic flavors. There was orange, pineapple, lemon, strawberry, and raspberry. The influence of gummies didn't reach the US until the 1980s. In 1981, there were 2 companies that started making gummy bears in the United States, Ermengolitz and Brock. It was in the next year when Haribo finally opened up stores in the States. And the rest was history. From gummy bears, now we've got gummy worms, we've got so many other gummy flavors. We have sour gummies too. Those are one of my favorites.
I'm a sour gummy.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we have gummy bears, gummy worms, gummy sharks. Sour keys are also gummies because now we have different variations of them.
Mm-hmm.
Gummy is a very broad term now.
It is.
I don't know about you, but have you ever heard of any gummy controversies?
Controversies? No, not really. Why?
Well, there is one candy that gets a lot of controversy, and that is none other than Pop Rocks. Let me tell you about it. The last 50 years, people have been under the impression that Pop Rocks can kill you. It has been disproven time and time again, but some rumors just stick. In 1956, General Foods product inventor William Mitchell tried making a carbonated version of Kool-Aid. His goal was to put carbon dioxide into a solid that could then be put into a liquid to make it fizzy. A tablet that could basically turn water into soda. When they tested it, it left a solid, sugary crystal at the bottom of the glass. They tried out this sugary crystal, and they were shocked when the candy started to dissolve and pop inside their mouth due to the carbon dioxide. However, it would take them another 20 years to bring it to the market. It's not known why they kept the recipe a secret for 2 decades, but once it hit the shelves in 1976, they were a huge hit.
Kids loved the popping sensation, and the candy took over the sweet tooth of American children. As the candy gained popularity, rumors of exploding stomachs followed shortly after. Rumors that drinking soda while eating the Pop Rocks could result in your stomach exploding. That's right, they said your stomach would go up like a bottle of Coke with some Mentos in it. Rumors got so bad that people believed a TV child star died to the combination. In 1997, just 3 years after the candy hit the shelves, General Foods saw a whopping 24% decrease in sales, and eventually they had to pull them from the shelves in 1982 due to the lack of success. General Foods then decided to make an announcement to ensure customers understood that Pop Rocks were not harmful to the body. They ran a full page in the newspaper that then ran in 45 major publications. They wrote over 50,000 letters to schools and school boards. They updated the product information forms and even sent the Pop Rocks creator, William Mitchell, to various schools and conferences to explain that Pop Rocks were safe to eat. Mitchell was quoted saying, "The worst thing the rocks could do is make you burp. The amount of gas in Pop Rocks is less than 1/10 the amount in a can of pop." Less than 3 years after the halted production, a new company purchased the recipe and the rights to Pop Rocks. They started to test the market in New England, North, and South Dakota. The candy gained popularity again, and by December of 1986, Pop Rocks had shipped over 1 million packets and was looking to spread to a larger market. The growth resulted in the candy being produced across the United States and into Europe. And while you can get your hands on the original cherry flavor, they have expanded their flavor profile. Flavors such as grape, green apple, strawberry, watermelon, and my personal favorite, blue razz.
Nadine, have you ever had Pop Rocks?
I have not, Jenna. I kind of want to try one now, to be honest with you.
You definitely should. And on that sizzling statement, that is all the history we have for you today. We hope you enjoyed listening to today's episode, and if you did, there is more where that came from. All you have to do is head over to YouTube and search the letters DC, followed by broadcasting, where you will find all the episodes of The History Of. I'm Jenna Hogg, and with me is...
Nadine Gonzalez.
Thank you for tuning in.
This is Discovery, featuring podcasts by students in the broadcasting program at Durham College. Up next, Era of Evolution.
Hello and welcome. I'm your host, Owen Lown, and here with me is my co-host, Mark Dixon.
It's good to be here, Owen.
And this is a brand new podcast, which I have named Era Evolution. Me and Mark were born in two different eras, Mark being a Gen Xer, and I'm a Gen Zer. And we'll be talking about the vast differences between the two eras. And you know what, Mark? I think it's going to be a great show, so let's dive right into it.
That sounds great to me. Where should we start?
So, Mark, the biggest thing in my eyes is how technology has changed. So, Mark, I think the first bit of technology we should discuss is how phones have changed. Smartphones, cell phones, you know, landlines, all that. I think you should dive into this topic because I feel like you've had a lot more experience when it comes to that than me.
It's true. In my lifetime, phone technology went through amazing changes. Yeah, when I was growing up, we did just have one phone in the house. It was a dial phone. It was just in our kitchen. So if you were on the phone, if you had a phone call, there's no privacy. It's just whoever in your family was around was there. And if you were on the phone too long, they were yelling at you to get off. So that was different. And then it quickly evolved. As years went on, it did become more common. I guess some kids were lucky and had a phone in their room, but it was just an extension, right?
Was it also the same line? Click the phone.
Yeah, at the beginning. And then some people, when I was growing up, we did switch to the button dial phone. So when I moved out for the first time, I got my first button dial phone, which felt pretty cool.
Around my house, we do, in my parents' room, actually, we have a button dial landline where, you know, what is it? It's, you know, connected through a cord.
Sure.
And it has, you know where you lift up the phone and you can, like, push it down, like,
yes.
Angrily?
Yes.
If you're mad at someone, like...
So much better.
You could do more emotions with
that. So much better. Angry phone call was... I mean, I tried to avoid them, but it was. It was very satisfying. You don't get that with modern phones.
No,
but,
yes, yeah,
it's totally different. But your folks have kept the landline, like,
yeah.
A lot of
My
people
parents
do.
Are old school, so they like to keep it.
Yeah, I still have a landline too. I like it. It's good in case of emergencies. If the power goes
out, right,
it'll still work. Where cell phones might go down. It is. So, yeah, they're pretty cool.
Speaking of cell phones, Mark, I assume your first personal phone wasn't a cell phone. Did you have like a BlackBerry or a flip phone? What was your first?
No, I did go right into like a cell phone. I mean, yeah, BlackBerries were popular, but they were a lot more money, and they were a lot of people who needed it for business or that sort of thing would spend the money on it. Other people did too, just because they were cool. But for me, I think it was just a little AudioVox phone. And when I got my first phone in the early 2000s, it was a time when it was going from the original phones that were big brick phones, as you've seen in movies and whatnot, I'm sure.
Just the massive, you know, you pull the antenna out and like it just keeps going and going and going.
And it's huge.
And it weighs like 5 pounds. Yes. It's massive.
It was definitely for rich people in the beginning. By the early 2000s, the technology was improving. And the big thing was getting small phones. So that was a cool thing. If you had a cell phone, the smaller it was, the cooler it was. And it just happened when I got my first twin. It was that era. So the first phone was just this little tiny one. And you couldn't really text. I didn't have a keyboard or anything, right? It's just a number pad. So you had to text with the numbers, which is super annoying.
Yeah, because what is it? Say you wanted to like get to like, you know, an M or something, you'd have to go through like the other letters before to actually get the M. And then if you want to capitalize it, you'd have to go through it twice.
Yes.
That sounds so annoying.
It was. You'd have to practice on it in order to master that. I didn't care that much, but it's just handy for convenience. I loved it because a lot of my friends already had cell phones. I didn't care about technology that much, but eventually just could reach that point where that's how people were communicating. So you felt left out if you didn't have one.
Yeah.
So I loved that phone once I had it. It was also nice to say goodbye to pay phones. Because
remember those.
Because they were everywhere. That's how you communicate. If you're away from home, you'd find the nearest payphone. And I can't even imagine now with people like we're so concerned about germs and everything. But yeah, you would just use the public payphones. But so yeah, it was definitely nice having a cell phone. And then quickly, it would, after that, the technology kept changing. I got a flip phone after that, and then a slider phone, then my first smartphone.
Ah.
So, and now there's no looking back. You have to have a smartphone.
Well, for me, first phone, as I said, my parents, you know, landlines. We still have landlines, but, you know, I wasn't very active using those. My first cell phone, because it was a cell phone I got, not a crazy thing, not like, you know, the newest iPhone or anything, but
right.
I got that in the eighth grade.
Nice.
And, you know, getting it, I kind of already know how to use them because my mom and dad had one, but, you know, it was a cell phone. Like, it was, you know, I could go on the internet with it. I could download music. I could, you know, text and call people. I could do all that stuff that, you know, we're all accustomed to now.
Sure.
I didn't have to go through the brick phones, the flip phones, the BlackBerries, the annoying texting keypads. I just jumped straight into, the touchscreen.
That's awesome. And then did you find, too, because I hear with my friends with kids, there's often an argument in the household because kids always want their cell phone before their parents feel they're ready for it. Grade 8 seems like a good time. But did you ever have any issues like that?
I know some of my friends, well, the way my parents did, my brother, sister, and I, we got it at the same time. There was like technology, you know, levels and stages. Like when we were 10, we got an iPod and a tablet. When we were 13, we got the phone. When we finished, I think, when we started high school, we got a computer. Because, you know, that's what we need for all those things.
Very reasonable. Sounds like very smart parenting decisions.
Yeah, they did good with that. But what is it? You know, I had friends who had cell phones at like, you know, the fourth grade. And like, you're like, what, 9, 10 in the fourth grade? Like, what are you needing that for and stuff?
Yeah.
But
now, early.
They mainly got the phone at that time because it was, you know, you're going to high school. You're going to need it. You got to let me know what's going on. Because in elementary school, phones were, you know, what is it? Confiscated and taken away so you couldn't be on them in class.
Oh, okay.
You know, Mark, I think that's a good segue to the next topic. How has school changed from the eras? Because we'll start with elementary school, but, you know, let's start with your elementary school experience. What was that like going to school in, you know, Gen X? We won't go into specifics.
Right. I feel like, I don't know if it's changed that much at that level. Like, by the time you get to high school, I feel it may change more. But elementary school, it does make a difference too. I went in to a country school, so there wasn't anything around that. So once you went to school, you were there for the day, and there really wasn't anywhere to go. So we were there the whole day. Yeah, I don't know offhand, because obviously we didn't have a lot of technology, right? Like, we definitely, at that age, didn't have computers. In the cities, they may have with bigger budgets, but we didn't have any computers. So that part has probably changed a lot. Computers didn't come into education until high school.
Well, what is it? I'm trying to think. In elementary, oh my gosh, as early as kindergarten when I was 4, I remember playing on like the computers in the back during playtime. So you only got computers when you reached high school?
Right. They were really expensive then, so schools didn't have the money to invest until they did know that technology is evolving and that people would need to use computers in the future. But yeah, it wasn't until there wasn't a computer lab until high school, just because I think of the elementary school. It would have been just too expensive to, and it wasn't that necessary at that point. It wasn't until high school that they felt you really needed to learn about it.
I have a question for you regarding, I know we're still on technology here, even though we're under the school banner, but what is it? I assume you saw blackboards. Did you have either the projectors or did someone wheel in like a box TV you guys?
We had the projectors for sure. Like they were a big deal, like for the slides and what?
Yeah, the slides. Like the teacher would say, do, you know, math on like a board and like it would show for all the kids.
Right. Slides were a big deal. Oh, yeah. They definitely had that kind of technology. The slide projectors. Yeah, they love that. They would wheel in like if we had to watch a video or something that was like a TV that would be. Like, you know, it was on a stand and they had a TV and VCR so they could play like a tape or something, an educational program or something big was happening in the news. They might even bring that in to share. And there were still lots of that was part of education. I'm sure that still is. Science teachers play videos.
When I started elementary school, they were phasing out the TVs. No one was getting wheeled in. They invented something called the smart board, which basically you hooked up to a computer projector in the ceiling, like it projects the computer screen. So there was no need for TVs because, you know, YouTube and that was coming.
Of course.
Which was not at your time just yet. But no, I remember we did have the projectors. Like teacher would put a projector in the middle of the room, put the light on, it would go on the wall and like show us how to do science or math or whatever. So I'm glad to see the projector actually survive for quite a long time.
That's nice. And did you have like an AV, like an audiovisual like club or anything?
There was no AV club in high school. Or elementary school.
Okay. Because the teachers, it was so easy. Like, sometimes it was a cool thing that for the kids who wanted to learn about that, they could kind of help the teacher with that. But I guess technology probably made it easier for teachers, I'm guessing.
Yeah. And what is it? AV Club, I assume that's just learning technology and stuff?
Yes.
I remember, not in elementary school, but in high school, we had specific technology classes. Like, I took something called ComTech, which taught me how to use computers, Photoshop, editing software, cameras.
That's great.
Computers, all that stuff, which was a great class. I really enjoyed it. I learned a lot in that.
Were you coding too? I understand
that. That was a different class that I actually didn't take. But yeah, we did have computer classes more like that in high school. Did you have computer classes?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I started with typing class in grade 9.
Oh, on like a typewriter?
Yes. We were still, you still had to have your typing skills. So yeah, there were electric typewriters though. So
speedy.
That was absolutely. So it was great. But then we did get into a computer class. There was a computer lab, and we started with, there was early coding, right? They would get into that a little bit. A lot of us just, because for a lot of us, we didn't have computers at home. Some, again, depending on your family budget, a handful of kids might have had the money to.
For like, a family computer.
Yes, but most of us, I'd say, and maybe because we're a country school too, most of us did not have a computer at home. So this was our first introduction to computers. So it started off very basic. But yeah, it was cool. We did get to do a little coding. And I remember there was like a video game that was very popular, the Oregon Trail, I believe it was called. And it was just, you just type in simple commands. And you would have to try it. I think it was like finding food. And you'd have to contend with the elements. And
was that your first video game, Mark? The Oregon Trail?
I think that would have been one of my first ones, yes. Yeah, that would, I mean, it's the age of Atari. Some of my friends had Atari.
Well, do you want to talk about video games?
Sure, we might as well.
Okay, yeah, the Atari systems. Okay.
That was the big one when I was a kid. I remember I'd go to my friend's house, and that was the era of Pac-Man and Donkey Kong.
I know one. Okay, I've only heard rumors of this. Tell me if I'm wrong. There's this lovely game I hear called Pong.
Oh, absolutely. That was just before my time.
Okay.
But funny you mentioned that, because I did ask for an Atari system.
For Christmas or
friends. Yes, for some special, one of those. And then my parents, who didn't really understand or care about technology, it didn't mean anything to them, which I get, they ended up they got a good deal on an old Pong system.
Lovely.
So we did have Pong in the household. It was fun. It was like a little tennis game you may have seen. Just the
back and forth
lines with the ball. Yeah, it was very simple. It was fun. It wasn't Atari, though. There was no color or anything. It wasn't quite the same. So I never got and Atari. But you could go to, like, there was arcades you could go to and play all the games on the big...
Oh, and put the quarters in the machines? And
absolutely.
How much quarters have you spent in those machines, Mark?
I didn't spend that many. I was out of budget, and I didn't care that much, but it was just a cool place to hang out. Although, my parents also didn't really approve of arcades.
Really?
Yeah, the one... Because we had to go into town for that, being in the country. And the one was attached to a pool hall, which had a really bad reputation back in the... I don't think it was actually that bad, but pool halls were known for that. So didn't really go to the arcade a lot, but a lot of my friends, yeah, it was huge.
Well, for me, Mark, I never did the quarters. I sadly missed that era myself. But what is it? My first thing was a Nintendo Wii. And I remember playing games like Wii Sports, Mario Kart, all those fun games. And nowadays, Mark, I play a lot of advanced computer games with the best graphics and, you know, amazing
even
processing.
In your young life, you've actually... Because I remember that time, too. It was huge. I had friends with that. You'd go and play all those games, tennis and bowling and everything.
Yeah.
But yeah, even in your time, though, because now you understand, you're kind of a really good video game player.
I play a bit, yeah.
Yeah. But, and things like, I understand, even at college level, there's like a whole gaming, I don't know what you call it,
scene.
Gaming room. And it's like a whole room that students can go and play video games. We definitely didn't have that when I was growing up. That
not dedicated buildings
of.
To it.
No. So that's pretty incredible.
Well, Mark, I could talk about video games and that whole development for hours. But sadly, Mark, I think we've come to the end of our episode. I appreciate you for joining me on this episode of Era Evolution. And I would like to thank you for your time and just a lovely conversation.
Thanks, Owen. It's been great talking with you.
Well, as I said, this has been the first episode of Era Evolution. I hope you guys tune in next time for our next episode. But for now, bye.
That's our show for this week. If you've missed our previous episodes or want to re-listen to your favorites, simply search for Discovery wherever you listen to your podcasts. Or head over to our website, 1059theregion.com. Under the podcast tab, click on Discovery. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you next week.
Discovery, the radio show for podcasters, exclusive to 1059 The Region. Expand your audience and extend your reach. Send us your podcast, info@1059theregion.com.